this meeting. Welcome, everybody. What we have here this evening is Don Jardine from Markleyville, Eric Sandell from Truckee, Keith Dias from Rosamond, and myself, Amy Horn, from Truckee. And we are missing this evening two board members, sadly, Kimberly Cox and from Hellendale and Peter Pumphrey from Bishop. Well, he's really from Chalfont, but it says Bishop here. And our executive officer is Patty Covington. Unless you introduce the staff that are in the room.
There are so many. Let me, where shall I start? Well, we have Laura Kemper, our assistant AEO, and Mike Pleasant, who made it to the director.
Thank you, Mike!
And Kenny Meyer, and Amber Lucky, who's helping us, have been for since. So, Amber, thank you so much.
Thank you, Amber. So the first item on our agenda this evening is public forum. I see absolutely no public in the room, so I suspect we have no orange cards for speaking, so I think we have dispensed with the public forum. The next item is the reports by board members. Do any board members have anything to report?
You know, wonderful tour today. Other than that, no.
Mr. Dias?
Nothing.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is the executive officer's report.
All right.
I think I beat my record.
I think so too.
Except we didn't approve the minutes yet, so.
Thank you, Dr. Horn, and good evening, board members. I'm going to give you a few updates on my EO report, which is in your packet, and then give you some new information, and I'm actually going to ask your guidance on something, get some thoughts from you on a decision that's been put before me. Well, let me start with what's in your packet. We're starting something new where we're putting in just a written update on all of our employee changes, so you'll see that as a regular addition to your packet. I'm working on two other additions that we're still in the process. Is rather than waiting for your quarterly reports on enforcement monthly, I'll at least let you know what's on my desk for consideration and the status of it, particularly smaller enforcement actions. And I'll also be putting in a tracking list of the major letters I signed so you can see the 401 certs, the no further actions on underground storage tanks, and et cetera, other things. So you'll start. We're still working on that. So, as for new employees, congratulations to the Victor office. They've hired Sandra Lopez to help out the administrative team down there as a seasonal clerk. She worked for Phoenix Engineering as a staffing specialist for almost 14 years and had previous experience before that. So she comes with a wealth of experience and knowledge that will be very valuable. She has experience with computers, general office skills, and personal experience, so it'll really be a good asset to the Victorville office. The next thing I want to update you on, I will admit, come to you five times to say, our Victorville office is moving, and then lo and behold, it didn't happen for some bureaucratic snafu or process, but it's happening this time, I promise.
Oh my God.
Goodness. So they have a new office, and my thanks to Mike and Rebecca, who really have been the lead in terms of working with general services and back and forth and picking out rooms and carpets and working with the staff. It really has been a process where, you know, really the Victorville office gets to help decide what their office should look like. You know, really pretty much delegate it entirely to Mike and his staff. You know, it's your office. You decide what it looks like. And so I think they put together a great plan. The new office is roughly 50% larger than the last one, so that's a good thing.
It has to grow.
It's bigger. Yep. It has a bigger conference room. It's on the first floor, so it's easier to access. It has better lighting, and it's a much better location next to the Winco, or nearby the Winco grocery store. So it's not too far from the existing office. The sad news is that they will miss the neon billboard sign. So sorry about that, Mike.
Yeah.
The staff is looking forward to the larger office. I know they're kind of excited about that. I would be too. And they have room to grow for more staff with a larger size. I just want everyone to know, because we all have to be understanding and considerate, the month of July is when they're going to be packing and getting organized. And so, you know, getting things out the door, asking them for work, we all have to be considerate and help out the Victor Ball office. They are going to, the movers coming on the 15th. And over the weekend, I know that Mike and Rebecca are going to help with some pieces to make sure everything's in order so that on the 18th when the staff come in, they have a workable office. You know, it won't be entirely workable because you've got to pack, you've got to get organized, and there's always going to be bumps in the road with the computers. There always is. Cheryl Hanley from our job office, who deals with the computers, is going to spend the week down there to help the staff get set up and make sure things go smoothly. So I'm very excited for them. And then when you're ready, Mike, you'll have to let us know. We'll have an open house next time the board meeting is down south.
Mm-hmm. We need a tour.
September.
Yes, in September we'll have an open house.
This is great. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Well,
that's been a long time.
Yeah, hasn't it?
For a long time.
Well deserved, well needed.
Yes.
I'd like to move to some updates. I've handed out for all of you, just for your information, the governor's most recent executive order. I just wanted you all to see that. He just signed it this past Tuesday. And what he does, he's building on temporary statewide emergency restrictions to really establish some long-term conservation requirements. And there's been discussion for a long time that he was going to do this, and the water board will work, you know, hand in hand. But there are multiple agencies involved in the drought issue and the executive order. So I want to give you some highlights of what's in there. I think that's newsworthy. Is it? DW and the water board are going to require monthly reporting by urban water suppliers on a permanent basis, not just during a drought. They're going to develop new water use efficiency targets as part of the long-term conservation framework for urban water agencies. And these targets will go beyond the 20% reduction per capita that they've been asked in the past. The water board, will develop new emergency regulations, recognizing the differing water supply conditions across the state. The water board is going to build in for this time more flexibility for the districts in terms of giving them allotments, giving them more flexibility in how to deal with that. Something a lot of the water districts have asked for. And taking into consideration unique situations that each of the water district has, where it might be hotter in certain regions. We have our own unique issues here with the snowmaking. So you know, it's good that they're building a little flexibility in terms of how to deal with it. On eliminating waterways, the water board will permanently prohibit some of the things you've seen already. Hosing off sidewalks, you have to have shut-off valves on nozzles, watering lawns, in a manner to limit runoff. All those things that you've seen in the papers have been in the draft regs. I mean, in the emergency regs are going to now become permanent. And DW will take actions to minimize water system leaks, which is a big thing because I guess audits have found that water utilities are losing 10% of their water through leaks, or roughly 700,000 acre-feet per year, enough to supply 1.4 million homes in California's leaking through the old pipes. So that's good. And I know there's new technology out there. The governor did sign an agreement with Israel, who is a leader in this area, and so they're working with foreign countries as well in terms of sharing technology on that. Another thing it's going to do is strengthen local drought resilience. So they're going to strengthen standards for local water shortage contingency plans, which are a subset of the urban water management plan they ask local governments to do. The districts must plan for droughts lasting at least 5 years, meaning they have to really start planning ahead and what to do, as well as, you know, be prepared for more frequent droughts. So rather than, you know, react in emergency, I think they're really asking for them to do more longer-range planning to plan for these things. And for areas not covered by the urban water management plans, mostly rural areas or small communities, which is a big chunk of our region, they're going to be working with the counties to do drought planning. Mm-hmm. So that's probably where it will affect our region quite a bit.
The counties will be responsible for the drought plans?
I think they're going to work with the counties to improve drought planning. How It's not specified, you know, in these exact words, are like a sentence long, so it remains to be seen how they're going to be doing that. But imagine if it's following the methodology how they've done SIGMA and other things, it's probably in a collaborative effort with DWR working with the counties.
Because SIGMA doesn't county, well, no counties other than the adjudicated areas in our region are required to comply with SIGMA.
Correct. It's just what I was mentioning, what I was trying to say is that it's DWR's style.
Right.
To just work with in a more collaborative fashion.
No, my point is, though, that most of the groundwater basins in our region are encouraged to comply with SIGMA, but there are no requirements for them to comply with SIGMA. So this would help with
that.
Yes,
it would.
Yeah.
Remains to be seen what that will look like. It's not unusual when a governor does an executive order that the legislature takes hold of it and puts it into statute to make it really permanent. That happens probably, I'd say, 80% of the time when you see an executive order on the, what I call the juicy ones, which this would be. And sometimes they add their own bells and whistles. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see bill legislation introduced this year to kind of maybe answer some of those questions, Keith, that you mentioned, or Amy, that you mentioned, to flesh out these pieces. Another thing that's the last thing I want to mention about the executive order is improving agricultural water use. There's been a lot of comments from the public and environment organizations like to see ag do a little bit more. So DWR is going to update its agricultural water management plan so that irrigation districts quantify their water use and efficiency for shortages. So it's sort of a new thing to ask them to do that. They're also reducing the threshold of where you have to prepare a plan. It used to be 25,000 acres of irrigated land. It's now reduced to 10,000 acres, so more people are going to be captured within this for DWR requirement to do planning.
Is that per ownership?
Well, it's reducing service size, so I'm assuming it's ownership. But again, some of that stuff is what they work out. DWR is going to have to work out the details with stakeholders. What exactly does that mean? That's in this executive order. Stay tuned because there's usually policies, regulations, sometimes statutes that follow these things. I'm going to now shift to an entirely different subject, and this is where I might need your a little bit of your guidance. It involves LAEWP and the request, an emergency request that they gave our staff and I received this morning to use copper sulfate treatment at the Alabama Gates. Mm-hmm. So, towards the end of April, staff were notified that LAEWP was going to use copper sulfate to treat algae in the LA Aqueduct at the Alabama Gates, just a bit north of Owens Lake. On May 3rd, our staff did remind them that we have rules now on how to do that, and you can't just use the pesticide. You're going to have to follow our basin planning process. LAEWP was in a pinch because this water is needed for dealing with dust mitigation at Owens Lake, and they have to comply with the local AQMD's requirements, so they were between a rock and a hard place. My personal opinion, yes, they could have planned a little better, thought about this ahead of time, but nevertheless, here we are. So we did mention to them, LAEWP, that they needed to do better in the future and that we would consider this one request because they are in a pinch and there is a public health concern in terms of the dust, but you do really want water on the Owens Lake. And so they submitted our staff health and craft their emergency request, and that's with me. They did also indicate that they would do better in the future and that they would prepare a more comprehensive management plan. So, you know, basically plan ahead what their uses are and then comply with both the basic plan requirements of our board. Just some highlights of what's in the application. So the description is, it's a 20-hour treatment of the LA Aqueduct from Alabama Gates to Haley Reservoir. the reason they want to do this is, one, they want to clear the system of algae to avoid clogging of the intake screens, the filters, the spray nozzles for dust mitigation. And I think they're trying to optimize to now before the water heats up and they have even more algal problems, and it, you know, then they have to use more chemicals. So, you know, that's why they're trying to do right by this, by trying to do it now. They actually asked me if I could approve it by tomorrow, but I just received an email that Friday would work too. So they're using copper sulfate. They've done a communication plan with a schedule, you know, to reach out to stakeholders, a monitoring plan. They have a spill contingency plan as part of this. They have filled out the notice of intent for coverage and the state board's general permit, so they're following the rules. They have a mitigation plan to deal with, you know, closing the gates during and after treatment, patrolling the aqueduct for injured or dead fish as part of this process. So they really are doing, I think, they're trying to do a good faith effort of, even though they should have followed the rules, given their situation, they're doing the best they can with what they have. LAW also committed to doing pre- and post-treatment monitoring for water quality, dissolved oxygen, adverse impacts to non-target species like fish. They provided justification for the project, which they argue is an emergency project for human health and dust mitigation, and for future problems. Like I said before, they promised to do right by the process the next time. I had some questions I'm still trying to get from them, and some of it got answered today because I reached out to Phil Cadu, who is the officer for the Greater Basin Air Pollution Control District, of why LADP is nervous about this. He mentioned to them that at the moment they're not in compliance with the requirements to put the water on. They have not put enough water on, and they said, rough, and these are rough numbers off the top of my head, roughly 45 square miles of it is flood irrigation. Roughly 3 to 4 square miles of it is where they're going to use the sprinklers, and about 6 to 7 square miles is the mitigation area. And so they're trying to fix with this treatment two areas, the gates that get clogged up with the algae that they, this would then take care of the 45 square miles, and as well as the 3 to 4 square miles of plugging up the sprinklers. So it would allow them to come into compliance with, I think, the local air control management district's processes. So when I talked to them him this morning, he supported this effort because, you know, it's very important to have the dust mitigation dealt with. So that's the feedback I got from the AQMD. Some other questions I have are why is their proposal is 10 hours, about 500 pounds. It's a big water body, but it's a lot. Are there any methods they could possibly use to reduce the copper sulfate volumes, reduce flows or time? You know, is there any flexibility so they could, you know, at least reduce what they're using in the area? And other than they had argued the other way to do this is manual raking of the algae, which is dangerous for their employees hanging over the aqueduct. Mm-hmm. I understand the safety issue, but have they ever tried any other non-chemical methods? You know, is there anything else out there? That's more a question for me in terms of the future. When can we expect to see the comprehensive exemption request for the rest of their management practices? So those are a few questions I have of them, but as the EO, I'd recommend that we approve their emergency request to use the chemicals. And I wanted to get feedback from the board members if they how they felt about that, if they concur with that.
I have questions. Anybody have questions?
Well, two of our board members sit on the Great Basin Air Pollution Control Board, and they came back very positive about this whole thing. They left out the algae.
It's kind of what it's all about.
So it, but I am supportive, which, but they need to change in the future.
Plan a little better. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mr. Dines?
Sure. Patty, ideally, how would they have handled the situation? Would they have approached us several months ago?
Yes. They would have said, you know, we're planning in the late spring to treat this. Lori mentioned, she hearing from them, that they didn't use it last year, but they had used it previously in the last 4 years. So, I mean, it's not every year, but it's a routine thing they've used. I'm not so sure if they've ever gotten any state permits for the previous uses. But, you know, it's a new day, so, you know, we're trying to do better going forward.
So our basin plan also, our basin plan amendment to get an exemption for the prohibition for the use of aquatic pesticides has different criteria depending on whether it's an emergency project, whether it's something that is time sensitive, or whether, you know, there's no real time restraints on it. And, you know, if they were to plan more in advance, we'd have more information, more planning part of it, as opposed to being an emergency project.
So they created the time sensitive situation.
I mean, I don't know how it works. I don't know if they woke up one day and it was there. If they didn't anticipate it, I don't personally know. Or
my understanding is they polled all of their maintenance staff. Do you have any of these things that look like this that use pesticides this coming year? And they got nothing back from their survey. So it probably was a communication breakdown between the maintenance staff and their regulatory staff until this popped up, and then they were, oops. It should have been on the survey. But, you know, they're making a good faith effort by surveying their staff and planning. So, it's, you know, these things, we're all human. Things happen. And I think they've learned by this that they'll plan a little better the next time around.
Anybody else have questions?
Several.
Okay.
How much residual is left when they finish one of these treatments and is it effective? I know you don't have an answer to that, but the question is, this is a chemical that is going to stay in the water. What's the
half-life?
Well, it doesn't have a half-life. It's a mineral. It's a compound. It's going to stay there. It's going to wind up at the far end and will be absorbed into things. What's its effect on aquatic life, other than the algae?
It can kill fish. I'm not sure level.
Does it get into the sediments?
Remember, in this particular project there, it's going to end up on the lake bed because the water is being diverted.
Used for dust control.
Dust control.
Yeah.
Right. So we probably don't even really care.
Except for the fish that die in the process, because they're putting it in the aqueduct before the Alabama Gates.
Have we had experience of fish being killed by this? I mean, people used to put this in their swimming pools.
Yeah.
Unless you were bleach blonde, it didn't really matter.
Or minor.
You look fetching.
I look Martian.
So the way that the basin plan is written is that you have your treatment area, and outside of that treatment area, you're supposed to be meeting water quality objectives.
Yeah.
And that's the way that it's written, in addition to kind of putting management controls in there. So I'm not sure, though, within that treatment area, there definitely, you know, are effects.
Well, okay. I think we are perhaps agreed that it's okay to be killing the algae, but another question that comes out of that, which has probably already been asked, is how much do you actually need to kill the algae, and are we adding 10 times more than that, or just
that's
the right amount?
My question to them is,
and
do
I
you
think
really
we should be just adding the right amount and not more?
Right.
And we should perhaps ask them that.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing is, this lack of poor planning, it's not like they've never done this before, and that they couldn't anticipate that they're going to need to do it again. Mm-hmm. Seems to me we ought to say to them that one of the board members thought that mm-hmm. we should tell them we're not going to do anything about them using it this time, but mm-hmm. we are going to go after them mm-hmm. after they've done it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because there's no excuse. See if that gets any desired result.
I'll be sure to share that, and they will be looking, monitoring efforts, and looking for dead fish or injured fish. So
yeah.
It's my understanding too that they weren't aware of our basin plan amendment having been approved.
Really?
So our basin plan previously said, you know, no aquatic pesticides in detectable amounts. It's now you can't have any unless you get an exemption.
Previously?
Just not in a detectable amount.
We had total prohibition.
No, we didn't. Not for aquatic pesticides.
What we had was an objective, a narrative objective. The narrative objective said no detectable levels. And we never issued, so they didn't have authorization in the past. But
they used to do it anyway.
They did it anyway.
We were just looking the other way.
Well, we didn't even know about it.
No, we knew about it.
Oh, did we? Oh.
Not always, because they didn't get permits. There was no permit.
But, I mean, there were public safety and health issues here.
Yeah.
So, because of the way our basin plan was written before the amendment, we just weren't regulating it.
And because it took 2 years plus for US EPA to get back to us that they approved our amendment, I don't think that we were doing the outreach. And I mean, at one point maybe we were, but when it happened, I don't think everyone was aware that it happened.
I would argue that LIP did know, because they were at every single meeting when this was being discussed through the board, when it went to the state board. And I distinctly recall on the meeting we were doing the triennial review, which is about when I announced in my EO report, one of their employees was in the audience to hear that USCP had approved it. They may have forgotten it.
That's constructive notice.
Point for you. Well, I think, obviously, we should cooperate, but I think we should really put them on notice that this is unacceptable.
And we'll certainly carry that message to them, that they need to do much better.
Is that the sense of the board?
Yes. Yes.
I agree. But I have questions.
All right.
So I'm just curious. We've never gotten any feedback on how the pesticide amendment is working. Have other people, has that been working? Have people been applying for, has it gotten any action?
I think what they've been Lori, can you answer this better? I mean, we've been working on putting together that process now that we got the approval.
We did put out a letter to all the county vector control agencies, so all the counties were notified, and I'm not sure as part of that notification if Los Angeles Department of Water and Power received that letter, but specific to vector control, because the Basin Plan Amendment granted them an exemption kind of in advance of being for vector control, but it did require that the counties verify that they're following the conditions that the board...
Are algae considered a vector?
No. And so these were really more for the mosquito abatement programs.
Yeah.
And because State Board has a general permit for that kind of work, so we basically requested all the counties to submit the plans that they submit to State Board and a little bit of additional information just to verify that they were meeting the conditions that were established in the basin plan. So we've sent those letters out, and we've received notification from a handful of counties. And I think we're still waiting to kind of get some of that information just to be able to check the box. But the State Board has a new permit for vector control, and they send us regular updates when they get new applications for its use. So we get regular updates of who's applied, and then we can go to them and say, well, you don't have coverage until you get our either our automatic, or we're kind of doing a ministerial thing, just verifying that they've done everything we've asked. Or if they're not part of that vector control exemption, that they submit additional information to us for exemption.
It's
so
like an unnecessary step.
It's a little bit of an unnecessary step. I think if we look at it one time, it was sort of just a check for us to just make sure that they're doing what we think they're doing. You know what I mean? But it is work we hadn't really anticipated, and we didn't know when we were going to have the work, so we didn't know when EPA was going to approve it. On top of that, we've obviously been working with Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association, and you'll hear more from them tomorrow. They know they have to do an environmental impact report, and they have to go through a ton of alternative analysis. So they're the only other ones that are actively pursuing an exemption at this point. I think we know that we've got to deal with LA Department of Water and Power head on this copper sulfate issue. I mean, Havre Reservoir is listed for copper. We know they've got toxic sediments. We know, we know that we don't actually know how to resolve it, and we don't know whether we want to continue to allow them to use copper sulfate.
Or how bad it is.
Copper there, result of
them just dumping copper sulfate maybe for years. So we may allow them.
So it doesn't have any algae then.
No, there still is, because of all the sediment. It's toxic sediment, the water quality. So I think they want to come to us on a limited basis, you know, to try to limit the area they treat and, like, work around the lake. And then Lake Arrowhead is another lake we know regularly uses herbicides to control weeds, milfoil around the edges of the lake, and they do it, like, piece by piece. And they've been notified that they have to come to us, but we haven't received anything. We have to kind of re-engage with them too. So those are examples though of efforts that have been ongoing for many, many years that the board is going to have a chance to say, keep doing what you're doing, or you should do it a different way. You know, there's an opportunity to
But I think staff is gearing up to look at some
still
of these applications.
Well, it's a challenge, a workflow challenge.
This is one of the many, 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 many things on the list of the unaddressed work where we don't have any. We have increased workload, but no additional funds to deal with this new workload. So it's on our list, and as we're doing our workload planning now to see where we squeeze that in. That means something else gets squeezed out to pick up this workload.
So two more questions. Just the geography of this. So where do they take the water off to go out to Owens Lake? Is that between the Alabama Gates and the reservoir?
That I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it's Alabama Gates.
So by the time, the point is that when it gets to the reservoir, it's diluted.
Right, that's why their monitoring plan includes a boat on Haywee to look for dead fish because, they're going to divert the water into their pipes to go to Owens Lake. Above entering Haywee, but some water is going to enter Haywee, and that's the 20 hour where they discharge copper sulfate. They expect it to reach Haywee 20 hours later, and they're going to treat for 10 hours. I mean, they're planning on dumping copper sulfate at a steady rate for 10 hours, and it's supposed to take 20 hours to get to Haywee. So those are some of the questions we had. Like, really, why this long, and why, you know.
So, I mean, my point thinking is that sort of municipal uses of that water downstream aren't at risk necessarily because it's getting diluted once it hits the reservoir. Then the other question I had was, is there another way to treat algae? I mean, could you have, like, UV screens at the Alabama Gates or, you know, some non-chemical way of killing algae?
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Thank you. That's not even
she's
here.
It's one of my questions on the list for them that I ask them tomorrow.
That would be much better than dumping copper sulfate in there.
And that's one of the things that our basin plan does require in terms of that application is, you know, what other non-chemical options have you considered?
Mm-hmm.
So falling under the emergency provision sort of knocks out some of those.
Right.
Must we disagree it's an emergency, right? I mean, it seems like they're asserting it's an emergency.
Right. So if we disagree that it's an emergency, then they would have to go through that process.
Yeah. So one time a year? I mean, one time is sufficient?
That's what they have told. And I had Doug and Smith breaking up the coals already about.
I'd like to see that.
Yeah. You going to come back in 3 weeks and do it again? The answer is no. The other answer was, do you have any other ones lurking out there that you didn't tell us about? You're going to come in 2 months and say, desperately, I need something. The answer is no, we don't have anything else lurking out there for this year. So we've already been asking them lots of questions about that.
Okay. Okay, my curiosity is satisfied. Go get them.
All right. I will. I'll be stern, but kind. Since we're talking about water, why not? I'll talk about Marina General Permit real quick next. The TINA permit, which was intended to come to this board meeting, is going to go in June, and that's because we are making additional changes to it. Some of these will improve the permit's conformance with federal law, streamline the process, and make it easier to implement. And we'll be holding a stakeholder meeting tomorrow after the board meeting with the marina operators. There is a new revised draft out in the street for them to look at, and so we're going to have some more discussions about that and then how to make it mesh with our basin plan and other things. So you'll have a new revised marina permit in June. It may be on consent because I think we're going to be able to all the issues with the stakeholders. And they seem to be pretty happy already now in terms of the process. We've really been working hard. The staff have been reaching out to them, having meetings, discussing their needs, making changes. It's been a very collaborative process.
It's good work. I know a lot of work has been put in on this, so this is a great forward to see.
On the heels of our lovely tour today at the Ace Hereford Ranch, I am traveling down to Bridgeport to meet with the bro. I'm actually very excited about it. Mark Lacey asked me to come down. He and I have been having sidebar discussions about, isn't there a better way? With the waiver running out next spring, we need to start thinking about redoing the waiver. So this will be the third swing of the waiver. And in areas it's been working for them, in areas it's not been working for them, some of the ranchers have been doing BMPs, some not so much. And so Mark Lacey asked me, hey, is there a way we could do a watershed-based process where we deal not just with all the tributaries in our land, but also Bridgeport Reservoir and some of the problems that they're experiencing there, where I could get the irrigation district in the room, all the ranchers, and do more of a watershed-based approach as opposed to ranch by ranch by ranch by ranch. He also had an idea of being able to divert some of the water through a wetland, cleanse it before it goes to Bridgeport Reservoir. There's complexities with that with the water rights, but the good news is, a group of us are going down for a listening session and a brainstorming session with the cattle ranch to see what's possible. I've told him, by all means, we're open to all ideas, but if it's 2 years of waiver and it hasn't been working so well, we aren't seeing the water quality improvements, then clearly we need to do something different for the third try at this. So,
anyone have any questions about that? I do, of course. So, if you went to a watershed approach, how would you hold the individual ranch holders accountable?
I'm not sure how we're going to do that yet because I want to hear their ideas of what they're still thinking of. This is Mark Lacey's brainstorming, but we could do things like the irrigated ag and the other regions, how they deal that with a cooperative group.
Oh, I'd like to understand that.
Yeah, and that's how Region 3 and Region 5 are doing it. Again, I don't know if that model will fit this, but again, I'm not really entirely clear what exactly they want to do, and I think they have some skittish ranchers who may or may not show up in the room, so it may not work if only 30% of them want to do it. I don't know if 100% want to do it, so more to be seen. This is more of a brainstorming exploratory session. I'll know more after meeting with them. But I'm excited about the opportunity to try something new and different and if they're open to the idea. Since I'm on my road trip through the Eastern Sierras, I will hop back on the road with Doug Cushman et al. And go down to Bishop Creek. And so what we're doing is we've had this meeting last year, as you recall, to go over the bacteria data. So we're going to have another meeting again to meet with LADWP and County, the Paiute Tribe, to share our data on bacteria monitoring. From where we sit, the regional board, we now have 4 years of consistent data that we have a problem, and the numbers haven't changed that much. So I'm more in the level of let's move to action and not another year of monitoring. LAW would like to, I think, do more monitoring. We'd like to do less monitoring and have maybe perhaps them step up to the plate and do it. This is, again, we've been using our limited swamp resources to check the data. It's sort of my general philosophy to staff to say, if you have a responsible party and you have a problem, we shouldn't be testing the monitoring. You should ask them to do so. And so we're going to try to shift that. And it'll allow us to use our swamp dollars in other places where it's needed, too. So we're going to be discussing all that. We're going to be discussing about, what management measures, where some of the hot spots we can work together on, and more importantly, the data. We've asked for the data forever, and we've not received it. from LED IMP. We received results, lots of PowerPoints, but not the raw data for us to make some decisions about it. We will be doing a little bit additional sampling and testing, I shouldn't say sampling, because we already have a lot of the filters. And if you recall when Roland came to brief the board about his study, we have additional funds in a contract to look at this a little more specifically, and he was going to do, as you recall, that more refined test to see, you know, is it a ruminant or is it a cow or a deer? So he's going to help us with a little bit of that work. But I think we have enough to ask them for, you know, their monitoring data, to what BMPs are they implementing, what works, what doesn't work, where do they have cows next to the creek, where do they not, what things are they going to do. I don't think the community deserves a fifth year of the same results. Mm-hmm. I think it's time to do something. So it'll be an interesting meeting, and my hope is to send out what I call a scary letter by next week, which just asks for these things in writing, as opposed to a 13267 order that has penalties associated with non-compliance. This is part of our progressive enforcement process, where we just say, hey, you know, we need this information. And actually, we've been getting pretty good results with these firm letters that just say, you know, we need this information by this date. So I'm hopeful. And I've already told LADWP they're going to get their firm letter. And we're obviously doing them a favor with the or other problems.
Does anybody have any questions?
Any questions about that?
I do. So, I mean, you're alluding to this, but I just want to ask the question directly. What authority do we have to demand that they turn that data over to us? Do we have authority to do that?
Yes, we do. It's 13267 order. Because we have enough evidence to say it appears to be cows and it appears to be your cows on your allotments from our monitoring.
I mean, this creek runs right through town.
I know, but we've ruled out human. I mean, we just, when we started this effort, we were like, well, what, it could be people, could be leaky pipes, could be septic tanks, could be, what could it be? Could be geese, could be, you know, part of the early testing was ruling out things. It's not people, by the way.
Yeah. No, I mean, the point is that it's water that humans have easy access to, you know, and so we can't have it be presented as a health hazard.
It's pretty much all ruminants, the data showing all ruminants.
Can you talk a little bit about the authority issue?
Sure.
This is a precursor to the 1367 letter, which doesn't have that formal authority. It's kind of a polite but firm request. And so somebody could just say, I'm sorry, you don't have the authority to do that, in which case then we would go for it, mm-hmm. and we would deal with
right.
penalties.
Right.
So I guess it's just it's a kind of gentle way to get what we want without cracking the whip too much.
Yeah, we're trying to follow the board's direction of progressive enforcement. Yeah. And these, like I said, these letters actually have been pretty successful. Yeah. We've sent these. I call them scary letters because we do put language like, you know, if you don't report, you could do something worse to you. Usually that makes people take notice, and they have been responding.
So I was encouraged with Dr. Knapp's presentation when his comments about Mammoth Creek and how with different management practices they were able to clean up the problem with Mammoth Creek. So is there anything about Bishop Creek that suggests there might be a different result? I mean, is it more of a braided stream or something that makes it difficult to implement the practices that worked on Mammoth Creek?
I don't think so. I mean, from the little I've seen of that, the cows have direct access to the creek.
Yeah, that's the problem.
So, part of my trip down there is going to be a walkabout, a driveabout. We're going to be checking all the monitoring. We're going to... Doug Cushman are going to be doing some covert ops driving around the place.
So, A, it's a human health problem. B, it's easily solved. There's no excuse.
It's time to do something about it.
Yeah.
It's going to take them some significant effort, though, to keep the cows out of the water because at certain times of the year, the water table is virtually at the surface, and so cows could not be in the creek and still be in water that's going to make its way to the creek. So it's going to take a lot of fencing.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to work with them collaboratively to see about what's possible, what's practical, and see if it makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
I had suggested last year if they would just try a pilot in one of the hot spots and throw up a fence and see if it made any difference, but they didn't do put a pilot in last year, as I asked. That's the letter. The other thing I want to mention is I'm actually very excited about this. The press release should be going out shortly. Over the last several years, Jan Zimmerman, Patrice, Kim Niemeyer, myself, been working, and Mike, on the Peterson Ranch Mitigation Bank. I'm very excited about it. And it's not just us. It's with some other state and federal partners as well. And I signed the final agreement today with the other agencies. So it'll be the largest mitigation bank in California at over 4,000 acres. It'll serve the Antelope Valley with portions of L.A., Kern, and Ventura. It's very close to Palmdale, up against the base of the mountains. And my next EO report, you're going to get a nice report about with some beautiful pictures. It's really a lovely area there. So the Peterson Ranch Mitigation Bank is going to offer credits to mitigate impacts from wetlands to wetland streams and floodplains and open water areas and special habitats as well, including chaparral meadows and grasslands. The bank sponsor is Land Veritas. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly. They've worked with us, Corps Engineers, US EPA, Department of Fish and Wildlife, and to develop this mitigation bank, which has been thoroughly vetted by state and federal agencies and Kim to ensure that we don't have any liabilities and that our concerns are addressed. So Kim spent a lot of time back and forth with their attorney to get things hammered out on this. The mitigation banks are formed to protect special environmental resources, like I said, the wetland streams. So like developers or solar plants, for example, can buy credits from the bank to compensate for the impacts of their projects located elsewhere, but often in the same watershed. And so it's a good way, like, for example, a solar plant to mitigate and actually, you know, restore an area and keep it in the conservation easement so that we have that precious resource protected. We'll not have too many of these out in the desert, so we should protect the ones that we have. But, you know, there's a lot of requirements in there that, you know, to protect from future development, ensure the resources are kept in natural state. So that there's a burden on them to keep that land safe and in good shape. And our role will be limited. We have some, we'll check on, we'll do inspections on occasion, just make sure everything is indeed as it was we intended it to be. So I'm very excited about that.
What's the ownership of the Peterson Ranch? Is it private or not NGO?
It's this bank, I believe.
I think it's owned by an investment group. It'll be managed by a nonprofit,
okay.
Who has managed other types of projects like this in the past. So they'll be the ones who are making sure that those resources are protected. And and Army Corps and Department of Wildlife, California Department of Wildlife, Fish and Wildlife, will be much more active than we are in terms of making sure that all the financials, all the business part of it are where they need to be. We'll be more checking in to make sure the resources that we're interested in are protected. And so, much more than we will.
Second.
I'm not going to mention our two.
Eric had something.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
Once we allow the use of this mitigation bank as opposed to not allowing somebody to destroy the weapons?
Generally, as part of the project, we always try to have the project avoid impacts.
And that will still be
the number
same.
One. So that's something.
So this is like the
last resort. Yeah.
When we're convinced that there's nothing else they could do, but we still are inclined to let the project go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They actually have been really good, these projects, along with Jan and Patrice, to make sure they don't cite them in places that they shouldn't be in the first place. So I will say, you know, talking to Jan and Patrice and Mike, that they've been really good, these companies, in terms of when we tell them, yeah, that's not a good spot for that, maybe over there. So I think that will help with some of the mitigation. for those of that went to the Ivanpah site, you will see some of that. The last two things I just wanted to mention are our two bankruptcies. Good news, and semi, I guess, guarded news. For Briggs Gold Mine near Paramount Valley out there, that filed for bankruptcy, the good news is that it looks like we have a buyer for the Briggs Mine, a Canadian company potentially. So that's good news because then they can continue operating these sites. So. The other one, a bit more guarded, this is Mollycoor. So there's been a considerable amount of time spent by Mike's division and his staff and Kim working with the Attorney General, because we refer this to the AG's office, and the court, as well as other affected state and local agencies, in our interest to ensure compliance with environmental public health safeguards, as well as long-term cleanup is our concern. And the different stakeholders, CalRecycle and others, they have other interests as well. We hold about $25 million in surety bonds and are now negotiating to gain access to that funds and use. As for the long term, we will still need another roughly ballpark $40 million to see the site 45 years out down the road to closure and post-closure. This does highlight sort of a bigger discussion we've been having with the state board, all the regional boards, about we really need to revisit our financial assurances, that we really do have enough money and that we have some hook that they will actually pay this if things go bad, because this is not an uncommon problem throughout the state for landfills, for mines, or other places, too. I was going to ask Kim to help me now because she's really been in the meetings with the Attorney General, talking about the trustee and where we are on the status. And so Kim, I was hoping to give the most latest updates since you attended the last meeting.
Sure. So the Mollycoor Minerals, the Mountain Mine Pass, it was sort of split off and the rest of the company went into Chapter 11 reorg. They were trying to move the Mollycoor Minerals into Chapter 7, which would have been kind of a dissolution, and we had concerns about what that would mean and whether or not the ongoing groundwater cleanup would continue. Currently, there's groundwater pump and treat going on, and that's helping to contain the contamination that's currently there. So us and the county objected to that motion, and the bankruptcy judge agreed with us, moved to appoint a Chapter 11 trustee, and that happened, I think, on May 2nd. And shortly thereafter, so that was like Monday, May 2nd, shortly thereafter on Wednesday, Mike and the Attorney General, Alex Fish, and I was on the phone, all met with the sureties, the people who hold the bonds, and basically their attorneys, the county, and I believe there's about 10 employees left.
Yes.
And these were kind of the key employees that are needed at the site, down from, what was it, Mike, 200?
400.
So the meeting was essentially to try and understand kind of what's going on, although the sureties kind of hijacked that a little bit. But Mike was able to meet with the trustee the following day and really try to explain what's going on the site that we have concerns about and that we think need to be taken care of. Unfortunately, there's only about $2.5 million right now to operate the site, pay the trustees' fees and expenses, pay for the security at the site, pay for the employees. So this really isn't a lot of money. So right now, we're kind of in a holding pattern for the next several weeks. The trustee is trying to get a good understanding of what has to happen in order to kind of preserve the value of the site. So making sure the permits stay in place, making sure people don't take off with the assets on the site, such as some of the machinery, and I think there's a power plant, some different assets on the site. Trying to get an understanding of what has to happen from an environmental perspective to protect you know, all the various resources. There's ponds that we have concerns about in terms of their capacity right now. Again, the pump retreat needs to continue. And then finding a buyer. So the big hope is if there's a buyer that comes in, perhaps they'll be willing to see this as a long-term investment and spend the money that kind of needs to be spent to get things back running and in place. And there hasn't been, so far, anyone interested. So we're looking at all the various options. A budget is going to be put in place so that we know what's, where all the money is going. As Patty said, we do have $8 million that in corrective action, bonding for corrective action. The rest of that money is for closure and post-closure maintenance, so we're not really sure how we would be able to access all that money, the total $25 million. The money the county has is just for reclamation, which is basically filling in those ponds and kind of getting everything, the surface back to normal, but can't really do that during the cleanup phase too. So a lot of moving parts right now. We're not really sure how it's all going to work out. The AG is looking at other options in terms of getting additional funding because we'd like to make sure that our $8 million isn't being spent for other things like security and the maintenance of the site. So there may be other ways to get money out of the assets that are on the site. So I don't know, Mike, if you had anything to add.
Not really. I mean, the trustee Ballard Spar brought their environmental guy from Pennsylvania who's had some experience dealing with a gold mine that went bankrupt in Colorado. So he's got some experience. He knows from Pennsylvania, but it was clear to me. I met with him and the county and the Molly Corps representatives at the site last Thursday, and it's clear that he was he had bitten up a lot and was getting a feel for all the different things going on out there. So yeah, there are a lot of issues that need to be resolved. We have groundwater remediation that's underway. That'll be going on for at least 30 to 40 years, probably more. There are ponds that are at capacity and will need to be dealt with to be maintained in the long term, because all that groundwater that's extracted from the plume is then sent out to the ponds. So that's a system. There were solids that were discharged to the ponds when there were some upsets in the mine processing system. Those will need to be removed so they can build capacity. And there's going to be some, there will continue to be leakage from the P16. That's the big surface impoundment that was online back in the day. And that's going to continue to contribute to the groundwater pollution problems along with some of the other pond systems for the next, you know, 30, 40, 50 years. It's going to be a problem. So those will, that's going to still need to be addressed. And there's going to be maintenance that needs to occur on the site for just stormwater controls that, you know, and these things, the parts that are capped will need to be maintained. And they have done it. They had a big washout a couple of months ago on P16, and they repaired that washout. So yeah, those things will have to continue. I think those are kind of the major muscle movements that are going to eat away at that $8 million.
And just, you know, to make this even better, it's now in our unaddressed work pile because we used to have somebody bill our hours from there. And then. So. And it's a lot of work. But, you know, we're trying creative ways to see what we can do about that, too. Any questions for our members? That's my report.
I have covered lots, but I won't bore everybody. So I'll just ask them later.
All right. You may ask. Anyways, thank you.
Can I ask a question?
Of course.
This regards a table in your report that you did not address, but it's on page 3-15. salt and nutrient management planning progress report?
Yes.
In particular, the top row indicates the various IRWM groups in blue.
Yes.
And next to the last one is the Fremont Basin IRWM. And down below, in the bottom row, it indicates that a potential draft plan has been completed and currently is under review by the regional board. But I didn't think that the Fremont Valley IRWM was far enough along to have invested any money in the salt.
I think they sent something to Cindy Wise to look at.
Okay.
I'm not sure. As I recall her saying it wasn't quite. It needed a lot of work, right? This is the one that needed a lot of work. But I think they sent kind of a frame, I think, to kind of get input from us about what to do.
Okay.
Well, that's good news. They're moving along.
Yeah, they're moving along as best they can. I know that they have limitations. And I can't remember if it was Fremont, if Fremont got the DWR money, but one of these guys got DWR money for planning. I can't recall which one.
I know they had requested some. I hope they get it.
Yeah, I hope they get it too, because I wrote a nice letter for
them. Yes, thank you.
That's why they're a disadvantaged community and they needed the money. So.
Right. Okay, that's my only question. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, the next item is the minutes of the meeting in March that was held here.
I'll make a motion we approve the minutes.
Okay, moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. We're gonna do a voice, a roll call vote. So we have Mr. Jardine.
Aye.
Mr. Zandell?
Yes.
Aye. Myself, aye. We have a quorum, so
there you go.
We have approved the minutes from the March meeting. Thank you very much. And the last item for the evening is the closed session. Do you have anything to talk about in closed session? No? Okay. Short but sweet. For that, we will meet back here at 8:30.